Yeah, this BL in the house with Hollow Flickers crew. Down Mac Kelly, A Flux, Domino. Man, we got to kick this little shit right here on my downtime on the album. Check it out. MCs is too promiscuous, so if you fuss, I'ma be the next to bust and take you on the extra dust. Reckless checkers, ain't nobody next to us. Step through us to get reduced to a speck of dust. Fuck the hecklers, detectives with their secret societies. We speak with variety, so stand back before you caught in my sand trap. And lariat, you better bury it. Go along with your merriment. Hyro getting every cent, and we earned it and burned it in your brain like brands. And now everyone's a man's Dell and his entourage, and you can all get squashed. We mosh it up, we mega ambitious, magnificent. Fuck the whimsical, miserable. We sit to kill competitors and regulate it. Make you hesitate, you better wait. Time to set it straight, you never take a foe for granted. Cause what you ain't peeping is equal to what we call sleeping. Slumbering and fucking cumbersome. Keep the tabs on their tongues and let the bomb numb your lungs. Yeah, craniologist, the many novelist. The tactical graphical with lyrics for capital. After you, high speed chase, we race. All existing life forms are driving the free base.
Hieroglyphics.
It's been a rough day in the donut family here.
Is that why when we're discussing the finer points of the Holy Church of Rome, you jumped down my throat, got all pissed off and stuff?
You made a repeated accusation that I have refuted for
that you just for
months at this point
that you just couldn't stand for, right?
Yes. Well, I have to take a stand there.
Let's take all the negativity out of it.
The vitriol.
If you got to release something, go ahead and do it now. I'm not saying what you're saying is going to be negative, but if you need to get it off your chest, go ahead and get it off your chest.
It's good. We got beat. We had a good season. Okay. My middle school, my seventh grade team, made it to the semifinal.
So got beat. I'm going to stop you right there, because your team got beat, and you got beat for blue cheese. You got beef with blue cheese, but any type of coach, all right, that doesn't get paid, that puts in the hours to make a kid, you know, at times maybe question how hard they work or how good of a player they are, and you give them a positive influence and, like, make them better, needs to be commended. And it's never commended enough. And I'm speaking from personal experience. I know you're speaking from personal experience. I started way back when I was, like, what, 19, 20 years old coaching and stuff. Very rewarding. Don't get paid. We get criticized a lot because maybe we don't talk to the kids the way the parents want to talk to the kids. But what you find out is that sometimes parents just don't understand. So,
all right, Will.
So all big Williisms aside, I'm going to give you credit for a job well done. Even though you guys lost or whatever it was, I saw you coach and what you kind of did to these kids and stuff. And you did a good job. And I'm giving you a heartfelt thank you, because coaches don't get heartfelt thank yous. And you did a good job, man. I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
But I got some bad news.
Yeah, well, it was good. I've gotten plenty of credit. But, I had good players, so, you know, it's not that. It's fun when you got good players and good kids. So we had a good run. Just didn't go all the way, as my father-in-law would say.
We didn't go all the way while he's cutting the turkey up, right? Smoking a spliff.
smoking the Marlboro Red and drinking the Budweiser. Giving me the talk.
Old school Philippines giving you the talk. It's like, I already screwed your daughter.
You're going to marry my daughter, right? But it was good times nonetheless. And we did good. It was a good season.
I had fun playing with them. You know, even though I made one of the kids cry. You accused me that I made one of the kids cry, which I didn't.
Oh, change the story right there. I made the kid cry. You accused me of making the kid cry. The
kid was crying before I talked to him.
That's the story.
That is the story. And it's sad that I have to defend myself, you know? It's like, what the hell? You don't believe me?
I saw no water.
Huh?
I saw no water coming from the kid's eye.
Oh, he was wiping way before some like two kids on your team. We're bagging on him pretty good, and I was like, "Hey, what's wrong with you, dude? You know, nothing, man." And then I told him something that he needed to be told, dude.
Nah, you told him what he needed to be told.
Yeah. So
I just don't know about the previous bagging that allegedly happened. But, So, but nah, I'm not going to dispute you. Didn't tell him.
Here I go. Here I go. Giving you credit.
Here you go.
Here we are.
Here we are. Back in the Pro Bowl. Did your idiot kicker get liquored up and ran his mouth one more time?
I need to get liquored up, man. But I'm
already ahead of you on that one.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, here we go.
That's not good.
Here we are. Recording a podcast. My podcast partner over here didn't get liquored up to run his mouth.
And all we're doing is talking about this guy. All right, so we are on the road to WrestleMania, and in true road to WrestleMania form.
Exactly.
I wasn't going to do the snowball. I was going to do the yawn, dude. Oh, so we're on the same page. So
yeah, they go hand in hand.
Yeah. Usually, like the I yawn when I after I snore. I think you yawn before you snore, but whatever it is. So you kind of had the same feeling that I did after watching Raw, right?
I thought Raw was fine. I mean, I thought the main event was a pretty good match.
I didn't finish it. I fell asleep. I did the whole fast run of Raw. I watched the cage match. Thought it was a good cage match. I didn't understand the logic behind the cage match. I mean, they wouldn't be able to win the title walking out of the. They had to pin him, right, to win the belts, right?
Yeah.
No okay. Escape. And then that makes sense. I mean, it felt like it was more like, you know, Cody's high spot. I thought kind of actually took away from the match. It wasn't totally his fault either. You know, I think a lot of it had to do with Road Dogg as well. I mean, Road Dogg didn't move under, you know, you have to protect the guy and move under the flipping moonsault. Mm-hmm. And he had plenty of time to do that. And it wasn't like you're standing there and you're looking at him like, you know, okay, he's in the air. Like, oh, he's not going to hit me. It's like, dude, move in the way. You know, like, take one for the team. And, you know, but at the same time, I mean, every time I see Billy Gunn, you know, it's like the guy, it's like he'd never left. And I think he puts on better matches now, you know, than he did back then. Road Dogg's definitely the weak link, but Road Dogg is so good with everything else that he does. Road Dogg's he's a good heel. You know, he's a good heel, he's a good face. He just has those moves that can accentuate whatever he's going to be at that time. What I really liked was SmackDown before that. I thought a lot of storylines involved there. Primetime players, you know, breaking up, and then even the slow run that they're giving Jack Swagger. You know, I like that aspect. I just don't know if Jack is ever going to first of all, reach the plateau, stay on the plateau, and then maybe move up. I just think he's kind of locked in terms of what he is. I find it funny that they're pushing Jack Swagger instead of Cesaro. You know, but I think that's more of a credit to what Cesaro is, because I think Cesaro, they need some heels. They need some good, legitimate heels now that you kind of lost the whole kind of gray matter that Punk is. And if you really look at that roster, they don't have a lot of good heels right now. There's not like the, you know, you have Orton, but Orton's Orton. And that storyline, any storyline that he's in, you're not going to care about it. And you look at like kind of the straight heels that they're supposed to have, the Shield and the Wyatt family. They're heels, but people love them. So it's kind of, you know, I don't know if Cesaro's going to be, if his character's going to be expanded with them breaking up. I just don't see him moving away from the mid-card. But
yeah, but Cesaro fits into that same category with the Wyatts. He's a heel, but people like him. People know him. They want to see him. They cheer for half of his moves. So, I mean, I don't see how making, if they're going to make Swagger a face and leave Cesaro as a heel, I don't see how that really necessarily makes sense either, because people want to cheer for Cesaro. I think you're right. To a certain degree, you know, they don't have a lot of really good heels right now. But I kind of like what Randy Orton's doing. I mean, I think he's doing the best he can do with what he's been given. When they put him in a match like they did against Daniel Bryan, the matches are good. Like, his work's really good. Like, you know, the storyline, you know, it kind of starts and stops. It's not like a really smooth storyline. I don't think that's necessarily his fault either. It kind of just depends on, you know, it's a very tired storyline that they're using with him. And I think he's making the best that he can make. I think the matches he's putting on are really good when he's going against guys that can actually work with him. And I don't think he can put a great match on with just anybody. Like, I would anticipate his match with Batista is going to suck. But when you put him in with Daniel Bryan, or you put him in with any other guys that put on a good match, like, he's matching them. And don't know.
He's matching, but he's not elevating him. And I think, right. I think somewhere down the line, what they're doing with him, I don't mind what they're doing. I think somewhere down the line, does he have the opportunity where he can be a guy that can elevate other talent? I think he can. I mean, the guy's like, what, 27 maybe?
Orton?
Yeah. I mean, he's not that old, is he? Because he came in and he was like 18, 19, right?
Yeah, I don't know what his age is. Yeah. I would. Yeah, he's right around 30 somewhere.
Yeah, so, I mean, and you look at, like, the runs of, like, say, Flair, who's, like, I think is probably, like, your quintessential heel champion. I mean, he was already, like, in his 30s when he was kind of being the major heel, and he had a fast learning curve because he had to go to every territory and bump guys up. So, I mean, the jury's still out. It's kind of interesting to see the career arc of Randy Orton right now, and I think he's doing fine. I mean, he had, like, two really bad years where he wasn't allowed to be himself. You know, he didn't know how to face that face role. You like that? Face that face role. And then now you're really kind of see what his real character is, and it's kind of an extension of himself. And if he's a jerk, then he's a jerk in real life. Or, you know, I don't know if that is the case or not, but everybody kind of says that he is. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's good for what he needs to do. The challenge that I have for you is that we've been kind of having the same. I mean, last week we had Punk leaving. We were like 2 weeks away from, or 2 weeks gone from Punk leaving. And we kind of have the same kind of rigmarole of everything. You know, it's like, okay, you know, the Shield, we watch it because the Shield, Daniel Bryan this, Randy Orton this, John Cena even here or there. John Cena got hurt during a house show over the weekend. So certain things here and there. But on this road to WrestleMania, we already knew coming in that this was going to happen. So we got to mix it up a little bit. You know, I don't want to talk about Raw or SmackDown or whatever. I mean, can we talk about anything else within wrestling? Is there anything we can pull from the archives or anything that we can do? Like, talk about certain things or certain aspects of wrestling, if you will.
Things. Well, I mean, I'm sure we can, but, I mean, at 12 minutes in, I mean, I think we can still talk a little bit about Raw. But what I would say about Raw, and I think this is the thing that is really interesting to me at this point, and this is kind of my curiosity with Raw this week. It didn't really have anything to do with the matches. It had to do with, like, how the crowd was going to react, and, like, and how much the WWE was going to try to stifle it, right? So, I know, I just found it weird, like, because there was a lot of talk, you know, kind of bring the internet wrestling community in and stuff on that, but it's like, there was this talk that, like, you know, Nebraska was going to be a safe, kind of like a safe landing spot for the CM Punk chance, and, you know, I think it wasn't like a really hot crowd by any means, but for what it was, I thought, like, it was, they got pretty good amount of CM Punk chants and things like that. I just think it's really interesting. Like I said last week, I think there's kind of a crossroads that might be coming with in wrestling, and that they might act, the guys, the creative or whatever you want to call it, might actually have to start listening to what the public wants. And I think for so long they've just specifically said, "Well, is this what the public wants? We're going to go like 180 degrees the other way." But I think you kind of with the way the crowd was at the pay-per-view, like they were really vocal against what WWE would have wanted them to be cheering for. And Daniel Bryan, you know, he's getting this big pop everywhere. Now with the CM Punk thing, you know, he's getting a lot of chants, some pretty funny signs up there. I think that they're kind of running the risk of, if they just continue to bury these guys or not give them the run that they deserve, I think the crowds are really turning against them, and I think that's a bad thing. And especially with Nebraska, I mean, I think it's just going to get worse. Nebraska is pretty neutral. I mean, I don't think they really care either way about CM Punk. I mean, there's enough fans there that like him, and everywhere they go, Daniel Bryan's getting the big crowd reaction. But as they get, like, more, like, you know, this next couple weeks, they're going to be in Chicago, and that's going to be kind of a big thing as they go to, like, East Coast or West Coast cities.
Well, in a couple weeks, they're going to come right here in San Jose, right here in San Jose. And I was going to take my kids to go see it.
Until you saw Punk?
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing is like without, I mean, I want to see CM Punk live. And without him being there, I mean, if CM Punk is there or CM Punk was going to be there, then I can get into watching Daniel Bryan. Then I can get into watching The Shield. I can get into watching the Wyatt family. But without Punk there, none of these guys that I just mentioned, I wouldn't go pay money and sit for 4 or 5 hours like you had to last year and watch it. You know, I'm not gonna go to a Raw where I'm not gonna care about the main event, you know, for the most part. And if I don't have CM Punk somewhere in that, I'm not gonna watch it. Or I'm not gonna actually go and go watch it. So that's like the immediate effect of CM Punk, at least for me.
Right.
If he was going, by all means, no question, yeah, I'll go. You know, I'll go there, sit 4 hours, and enjoy the WWE experience, which I have in the past. Mm-hmm. But without the guy that I want to see there, there's no other guy on that roster that I'd be willing to pay to see and wake up early the next morning to take my kids to school because my oldest daughter has to be there at 7:40 in the morning for her drama, you know, her drama thing that she's doing for her play. It's like, I'm not going to do it. It's just, it's too much of an inconvenience for me to do it. It's an inconvenience for me anyways, but to see CM Punk in person, hear his music hit, and then just kind of watch the guy just go off the cuff and, you know, kind of do what he wants to do, that's not me. It's not me now, you know? I'm not going to do it. So I think that's the immediate effect. Now, I'm not saying that their shows are going to go down in terms of sales, because they're always going to get it. But, I mean, going into this whole, like, I'm not a big ratings guy, but I think it really said volumes when ratings were down. I mean, they were really down for Monday. And I think a lot of it, you know, Punk does have a little bit to do with it. I mean, I think people... Daniel Bryan's great, okay? He's great. I mean, right before the pay-per-view, with the yes chance he was getting when he turned on the Wyatt family, and that stuff is epic. I mean, that's like epic level. It's like you're going to remember when you saw that. But you need to see him Punk to kind of carry that thing along too. As much as I like Daniel Bryan, I don't think he can be a really good champion without having the entertainment of, like, say, a CM Punk. And I think it's kind of the same thing with, like, we kind of related to WrestleMania 3. You had Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, but at the same time, you had Macho Man. But then you had all these other stars that they played the right way. You know, they had that card had a ton of other talent, and we got everything that we wanted to see. Even, like, the quote-unquote bad guys. Because, see, back then, they were bad guys to us. They weren't heels. Mm-hmm. But they played them the right way. And you respected the heel at the end of the match because you knew that these guys were good workers. So I don't think you know, as much as I think Daniel Bryan's doing a great thing, he's not a guy I would pay to go see a ticket for. And so I can kind of understand what creative says sometimes about him. But on the other end, too, if Punk is there, then you have Punk, so you have your cake and eat it too. You have Punk, and then you're like, oh, you also have Daniel Bryan. And Daniel Bryan's going to tear the house down. Punk, you know, you know what you get. You know what you're going to get from Punk. And you might see something great, like, level, the best thing ever from CM Punk. But him just being good by himself is worth the price of admission. And then at the same time, oh, but then I'm going to have The Shield. Then I'm going to have the Wyatt family. And then I get to see what this whole Daniel Bryan yes movement is. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pay for the yes movement by itself.
Yeah, I mean, I can see where you say that. Like, for me, Daniel Bryan, like, the work he's putting in is really consistent and really good. So I'd be happy to see that. But it's more, I don't know, I almost feel like Daniel Bryan getting this clean win over Randy Orton. It's almost like it's pandering. It's like they're in panic mode in a little bit because... I think they look at it.
What was the stipulation of that match? That he'd be the face. I didn't even.
It wasn't any real stipulation.
Yeah, it's really. Just yeah.
It was like a threat to Randy Orton.
Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, now that's the thing. It's like the match is great. But then they end up putting him in a situation where you kind of know he's going to win because there's nothing at stake, right? Just the maybe we'll look at him as the new face of the franchise, which you know isn't going to happen. But it is interesting to me because it makes it look like they're kind of pandering to, like, without giving him anything of, like, really, like, substantial value, they're realizing, oh well, we better let this guy win something just so at least the fans can be happy for once, which doesn't really happen very often with these guys. So I mean, I think that's something.
It's like watching an NBA playoff series where, like, say, like the team like the Warriors, like last year they upset the Denver Nuggets. They were the higher seed, and they faced the Spurs, and they had a legitimate chance against the Spurs in the first three games. But then after the fourth game, you knew that the Spurs were going to win.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, but they're an up-and-coming team. You know, wait for next year. And it's kind of like the same. It's like, well, yeah, but, you know, with the Warriors, we've been watching them for 30-some-odd years. And we've heard that before, oh, they're an up-and-coming team, wait for next year. And we can actually kind of relate it to the whole when you had Sprewell, Owens, and Chris Webber. Yeah, and they had that monster season. They're like one of the most fun teams. They were the most fun team to watch in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And kind of like the way Daniel Bryan is now. And then Weber's gone within a year, and you're just kind of sitting there going like, okay. And then now we have to endure, like, we had to endure like what, 8 years or 10 years of them just being bad. It feels the same way. It feels the same way to me. No matter what they do with Daniel Bryan, where he's beaten Randy Orton before, so it's not a big deal,
right?
You know, and you know that they're not going to protect they don't protect champions unless you're John Cena. Mm-hmm. They don't protect Randy Orton. I mean, Randy Orton right now to me is really an enhancement type of champion, which is really a stupid thing unto itself. It's like, you know, they put this guy in this position, and instead of him just like really taking off and becoming like this, instead of him taking off and say like a Bubba Ray, not is a what was
Bully.
It, Bully Ray now? Yeah, when Bully Ray had that run as a champion, it's like, hey, I'm almost going to start watching this, and then Bully Ray lost it for some stupid reason. It's like, dude, why did you take the belt off him? It was working.
You got to give Chris Sabin a push.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, to a guy that doesn't deserve the push. But I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like, so since they're not really protecting Randy Orton, and you know they're going to shaft Daniel Bryan at every turn. There's a reason why I didn't finish watching the match. I just didn't care.
Yeah. Well, it even got me thinking. It's like, okay. So they're kind of, you know, if you read in these reports, looks like Randy Orton and Batista is locked in as what's going to be the main event at WrestleMania. But I don't think anybody wants to see that match. And Batista's locked in because he won the Rumble. And I'm thinking, like, the only way out of it is to have Randy Orton lose at Elimination Chamber, which is really unfair to Orton because Orton's doing everything he can do. It's Batista that's really not bringing up his end of the bill over here. But the only way that they can kind of get out of this main event that nobody really cares about would be to make some kind of change with Randy Orton. So I don't know. I just find it weird. It sucks because, I mean, I think Orton I think he deserves where he's at, and I think he should be the guy to go into Mania. But Batista's bringing nothing to the table. And, like, people don't care about Batista at all. I mean, nobody gives a damn about
him. And they're just bagging on him left and right.
Right. And nobody gives a damn about him in Del Rio. I mean, people really don't care about Del Rio. And so, I mean, as much as I like Del Rio, I think he's good. I mean, so what? Batista squashes him for 2-3 months straight. No one gives a crap about that.
You know, I was thinking about that the other day with this match. And the one question that nobody has really asked is, okay, so if it's Batista and Orton in the main event of WrestleMania, what the hell happens if Batista wins? I mean, what am I going to... Why would I want to watch Batista, first of all, wrestle this match? But then if he wins, it's like, who the hell cares? I mean, I'm like pining, you know, and I'm thinking like, okay, how can they get Punk in? How can Punk come back in? Well, Punk wants to headline WrestleMania. So the only finish that I can think of that would make any sense or that I'm hoping for was one of the worst finishes ever in a WrestleMania. And I'm wondering if you know which finish I'm talking about. It was Yokozuna versus, I don't even think it was WrestleMania, but it was the one with Yokozuna versus Bret Hart. And Yokozuna beats Bret Hart, and then Hogan comes in and is like, and then Yokozuna, for some stupid reason, actually, not even Yokozuna, Mr. Fuji challenges Hulk Hogan against Yokozuna, which makes no sense. Hulk Hogan goes, brother, can I wrestle him? And, you know, Bret Hart, poor Bret Hart has a salt in his eyes and stuff. He's like, yeah, go ahead. And then Hogan squashes Yokozuna in 5 minutes, or not even 5 minutes, it was like a 2 minute match. And that's the only thing that I can see of Punk coming back, and that's the ending that I'm hoping for, is that Batista has this big time match with Randy Orton, he beats Batista, and then someone throws salt in Randy Orton's eyes, and Punk comes, you know, Punk comes out of nowhere and asks Randy Orton if he can face him, then he wins the title, you know, like that way.
Well, I mean, they could make that make sense if they had a limit, they had Money in the Bank at WrestleMania, and say they bring Punk out of nowhere, he wins Money in the Bank, and then he cashes in right there.
Are they going to have Money in the Bank?
Everything I've seen indicates that they will not.
Yeah.
But that would be the only way to make it actually make sense. Not that there's, you know, not that creative looks at anything involving logic, but that would be the one way that it would make sense, right? If they have this Randy Orton and Batista match, and whoever wins, wins. They're talking about Batista's going to turn heel after WrestleMania. I don't think it really matters at all. But if they do something like that, and then Punk wins Money in the Bank on WrestleMania and then catches in later that night, then that would actually kind of make sense, and that actually would be cool. But yeah, I don't see that happening at all. It's just they're kind of painting in a corner that I don't know how they're going to get out of it, except for they're going to throw Sting.
Sting.
Yeah, throw Sting in there. Oh, yeah.
I'm the Black Scorpion.
I can't believe how many people actually care that Sting is coming back, is coming to WWE. I mean, that's incredible to me, man. It's like...
Before you talk about Sting, so we have X-Pac heat, right? We have Vicky Guerrero heat. And then we have Batista heat. And the thing about X-Pac heat is that everybody hated X-Pac so much that he just got natural heat. Now, if you listen to his podcast with Stone Cold, great podcast. I mean, the first 30 minutes were really good. And it's kind of funny. Like, he's kind of the forgotten guy out of the whole NWO thing. And he's also the forgotten guy out of the DX thing, too. But he brought a lot of character to both factions. So you have the X-Pac heat, and then you have the Vicky Guerrero heat, which is just an automatic boo. Batista heat is nobody cares. He has no heat. And that's his heat, is that he walks out and people just go, they don't even go like, this guy sucks, I'm going to go take a leak. It's just like, okay, he's out here. What does it mean?
Now what?
Yeah. You know, what am I supposed to do here?
Yeah.
And I don't think Guardians of the Galaxy is enough for them to put him in the main event. I don't understand that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, now granted, Guardians of the Galaxy is one of my most favorite comics of all time. And I'm not just talking about the recent rendition of it, but the one before that, too. So I'm a huge Guardians of the Galaxy fan. I'm a huge, Rocket Raccoon fan. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the movie's going to do that well. I mean, the whole story of it is just, it's too cosmic. It's not something that the average moviegoer can ingest really fast without knowing some of the backstory of it. So if they're thinking this guy needs to be on... you know, needs to be in the main event because he's going to come out with a major blockbuster. I don't even know if that's the case, dude.
Oh, I mean, I think that's two separate issues right there. I mean, I think the movie's going to do well just because I think it's going to get the rub from Avengers. But, yeah, I agree on the sense that I don't think Batista's going to come out looking like the big star or, like, but the fact that Batista's in the movie is going to drive people to see, to go watch wrestling. I mean... If they think that he's going to draw anywhere near The Rock just because they're both doing movies, I think they're dead wrong. I mean, Rock was the highest grossing actor in the business,
and The Rock last is still year. The Rock is still The Rock,
right?
I mean, he you can separate him from both wrestling and from the movies, and he just has fan. I mean, he has a ton of fans in the movies that watch movies. People that don't even know who he is as a wrestler are going to go watch him because he has that natural charisma. Batista, we're sitting here going like...
Well, it's like
we can't even do a show on Batista. Like, we can't even do a whole podcast. Like, what are we going to talk about with Batista?
Well, like I would say, okay, did you see Man in the Iron Fist?
No.
So, I mean, he was fine in there. But he didn't... It's not like he carried the movie. The movie was pretty good. He was good in it for what he was. But it's not like you would come away saying, oh, Batista stole the show. And he's fine in the roles that he's in these movies. But he's not some guy that's going to, like... drive ratings or drive the box office, and just because they want to drop that he's a movie star or whatever, it's not going to make people all of a sudden care. to watch wrestling.
I don't even care right now.
Yeah, I think
this podcast is dying just talking about this guy, you know?
Yeah, well, I would say most people, if they see him in the movies, they wouldn't even associate him as a wrestler. They just think, oh, there's some, like, yoked out guy that's, you know, he's doing all right. But I don't think anyone's
but you're no Jean-Claude Van Damme. Okay. Well, but I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could take Jean-Claude. I don't know if he could take Bolo.
That was my bread.
I think Bolo would... I know what you're doing.
Well, then what am I doing?
You're dropping the Terry Taylor promo.
Thank you.
But I'm just saying, you mentioned Jean-Claude. I think he could take Jean-Claude, but I don't think he has a chance against Bolo Young.
Yeah, but Jean-Claude Van Damme beat Bolo Young.
But we both know that he can never beat Bolo Young. He actually beat Chong Lee, if you really look at it.
and that one biker dude don't almost beat him in Bloodsport.
Matuzak.
Finish him! Finish him! Matuzak. That was a Matuzak. Matuzak died, dude. No, he was just like some stock actor, dude.
He was.
I don't think he was a football player, but he was great in Bloodsport. What are you doing? Finish him. That's my Jean-Claude Van Damme impersonation.
Oh, and then Jean-Claude wears the bandana around his knee.
So symbolic. As a tribute. Yeah. So symbolic. Yeah. We're getting a blood sport over here, dude. Yeah. That's how bad the road to WrestleMania is. Yeah. You got to start talking about Jean-Claude Van Damme and his bandana.
That's how bad Batista's run is. We had to reach the blood sport.
So, but here's the thing. Like, when Batista first came back, you know, like, we weren't crazy about it, but we respected it, right? Because this was going to be like his final run, and we're like, okay, we're okay with that. And we even knew, I mean, see, this is like what the effect of CM Punk leaving does, is that we even knew that Batista was going to win. Like, we called it before in the Royal Rumble preview that we did. We both called it, and we both said we didn't like it, but we were okay with it. I mean, for a small part. But you take CM Punk out of the mix, and it's like, dude, I'm like, really? Like, we lost CM Punk because of what they want to do with Batista? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work anymore. I mean, without this guy in here, I'm not saying that there's not a reason for me to watch. I mean, I'm really interested in seeing the Shield versus the Wyatt family.
Right.
And I think both promos on both sides are really good. We haven't even talked about maybe the Shield breakup during this match, which it looks like it might happen. But the Wyatts are doing a great promo. I mean, flipping, you know, Luke Harper's even like cutting good promos. And we don't have the whole, Bray's great. And then you have Luke Harper on top of that, and then you have Rowan just say run. I mean, it works, you know. And I was like, oh, the big red beard retard can talk, you know. Rowan talked. The big red beard retard can talk.
He didn't even need a voice box gimmick to do it.
No, he didn't. He didn't. I won.
Yeah, no, I think that, I don't know. I wonder how much if that was planned, which I think it was. I know there was some discussion about it, but even that could be some like reaction backs. Like we got to give people what they want to see, because that's one too that you kind of look at and it's like, well, how many times have you ever seen like a heel versus heel program that actually worked, and this actually could be the one. And it's kind of funny because even though both of them are heels, everybody likes both of those groups. So I mean, I think it will work, but it might be the first time that they ever had gone heel versus heel, and people actually cared about it.
Well, I don't even know if you can classify both factions as heels. I mean, they're both pretty great, but
kayfabe wise, they're both heels. But you know, anytime that they try to put something like that together, it's really never gone anywhere. But people care about these groups.
Well, it's more of a case because they perform in the ring, mm-hmm. and the Shield. I mean, we've said this, you have been a big proponent of this, but the Shields, they're the best workers in the WWE right now. I mean, I would say even more, like, I am more interested in watching the Shield perform, and then you have the Wyatt family right underneath that. The thing that kind of bothers me about this whole thing is that, okay, so you have this hole filled by, you know, with Punk leaving. Well, there's other guys I can fill, you know, and nobody can fill this guy's spot. But now you can start bringing other guys in. You know, and look like the one guy that can get that gets over with the crowd and can get over is Big E Langston, and they're not pushing him at all. I mean, they have him with tag matches and stuff, and you know they're winning the triple tag matches and stuff. But this is a guy that can kind of come in and at least kind of assuage You like that word? Assuage our kind of frustrations of CM Punk being out. And they're not putting him by himself.
Well, there would be probably one other guy. And you know, I think we've all pretty much learned our lesson not to root for him to get any.
I don't want to say it because that's an easy way out.
Dolph would be the other guy that could really, it could really kind of come in there and make some moves. You know, I'd also start out there, another guy would be Wade Barrett. Man, it's like they make this whole kind of repackaging thing with Bad News Barrett, and he's got a pretty good gimmick going right now. And he's pretty much done pretty well with every gimmick they've ever given him, but they don't ever give him any opportunity to build any momentum in terms of winning matches. I mean, he'd be another guy that, you know, it's time. It's time to, like, let him start wrestling again and see where he can go. I mean, they got the spot.
Well, and he has... Wade Barrett, to me, shows everything that's wrong about WWE Creative. Because you have a guy that has gotten really good on the mic. This whole character has really... The Bad News Barrett character has really... he's really become entrenched on being good on the mic. He doesn't even wrestle. But he's very entertaining just on the mic alone. And he has guys that are tailor-made for him for matches, right? So you have... He is tailor-made for a match with Sheamus. I mean, he could just take off with Sheamus. I mean, these guys have wrestled before. They wrestled on the indie circuit in over in Great Britain. They can have... these two guys can have phenomenal matches. You know, you have a guy that... Sheamus is an overpowering guy. He's an overpowering wrestler. Well, then you have a guy like Wade Barrett who they have kind of delved into his bare knuckle background and stuff. But he can do stuff. I mean, after WrestleMania, when he fought someone. I don't even know
who. He fought Orton a bunch of times.
But I mean, he did the Cactus Jack spot and stuff. I mean, I remember that match. He had that was a great match.
When he hurt his arm?
No. It was after WrestleMania where. He was Intercontinental Champion, and I think he lost it. It was probably against The Miz, and then he beat The Miz right after. But so there's other guys you can put in there with him. There's other good guys that you put him in there with him. He could go against a Biggie Langston. He can go against Dolph Ziggler. But who do they put him with?
He can go against Cesaro. He can go against Swagger.
You have a guy that can go against anybody.
He can go against Langston.
So, but who are they going to put him in a match with? The Miz. And who gives a crap about The Miz? Nobody cares about the guy.
Dude. Maurice?
Huh?
Maurice?
Yeah. Who's Maurice?
The old former Diva, his fiance.
Maurice Ole.
That may be the only person that gives a crap about The Miz at this point.
It's the only person that's into him, or he's into her, or whatever it is. But, I mean, so it's... That just shows, like, where creative is at. It's like, well, let's put him with The Miz because The Miz needs some type of push. You can't do anything with, you know, you can't put butter on The Miz, and he can't get the rub from butter to get through a 2-foot opening, you know, through a fence or anything like that. I mean, he's so bad, he can't get the rub from anybody.
They can't even figure out whether they want him to be a face or a heel. That's how bad he is. He can't get over in any way. At least his calling card at one point was supposed to be that he could talk. The guy can't fucking talk now.
Yeah, because they try to make him a face. And I mean, The Miz for maybe a New York minute was a guy that could talk on the mic and just be like a straight heel. And what worked for him was that he thought he was the best thing ever, and everybody thought he sucked. And everybody thinking that he sucked and everything like that, and the way his personality was, that's why I liked him. I liked him in that role. And then he kind of, you know, even with him coming out with his, with that wrestling jacket that he came out with, you know, just the whole package that he had with his short hair and stuff. I mean, now with his long hair, I mean, he looks like a flipping, like, either he looks like a Valley Girl boyfriend or whatever it is. It's just, it just doesn't work. And so, like, well, let's put Bad News Barrett with him. It's like, why do I want to watch a match with him with Bad News Barrett? Because he's not good in the ring. At least his persona made up for his inadequacies in the ring. And it's like, and they're supposed to have this epic confrontation match. And so after this match, when it bombs, they're going to look at Wade Barrett and go like, well, Wade Barrett can't cut the mustard. You know, he can't do a program with The Miz. So he doesn't have a future with us. He has a future as a mid-carder. And then, the only person that Miz gets a rub from is from WWE Creative, because no matter where they put him in, and nobody cares about his matches, he's always a guy that they try to put somewhere else. And I don't understand that at all. I think he's far away removed from his MTV days where they think that he can fit a certain demographic. I mean, he was hot 15 years ago. I mean, he was something 15 years ago when he first started doing the Real World Road Rules Challenge. I mean, that was the Miz at his peak. And I don't understand what they think, what this guy brings to the table with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, even his program with Cena when they really were kind of force-feeding him as a main eventer, it wasn't anything special, it wasn't anything great. And then he's just kind of fallen down ever since. And then his persona is, at that time, you know, they had built him up correctly where, you know, even though everyone thought he sucked, he had won enough that he could come out and brag and at least, you know, he had some leg to stand on. But he's got nothing now, dude. He's been doing nothing for 2 to 3 years. I mean, he can't even come out and act like he's like this great performer or this great champion because he's done nothing.
You had him as like probably like the second best heel champion in the past maybe 5 years.
And is?
Yeah, think about it for a second. As a heel champion, I'm not saying that you know wrestling wise, but as terms of heel champions, you had CM Punk as a heel towards the end of his run. You can't beat CM Punk as a heel. And CM Punk was doing wrestling 1-on-1 as a heel. I mean, he was pulling out all the stops and the whole thing that is believable from him. When The Miz had that belt as a heel, it worked. I mean, it worked for the time that it was because the roster wasn't as deep as it is now. So he was able to kind of fit that heel role. And then when Cena beat him, it's like, okay, you know, it's like, all right. But hey, Cena beat a legitimate heel champion. He wasn't like the heel champion back in the 80s, but in the time frame that he was, I thought he was a legitimate heel champion. I mean, he did the job of what he was supposed to do as a heel champion. And you look at like Randy Orton now, they're not, if they treated Randy Orton the way they treated The Miz back then, I think Randy Orton would be a lot more successful than he is right now.
Yeah, I still have a hard time saying Miz was a better champion than Randy Orton.
I'm not saying that he is.
Right, okay. And the other thing I'd say is, you know, are we talking about WWE champion or if we're talking about world, like Mark Henry had a great run as the world heavyweight champion for like 2 years ago.
Big Show had a good run too.
So, I mean, there was definitely plenty of heels that had some good runs. Depending on what belt we're talking about.
So do they need the world heavyweight championship back? I mean, it just seems that now that they don't have this belt to promote either to push a heel or push an up-and-coming babyface, you kind of have what you have right now in terms of what the WWE is.
Well, I don't think they need it. I mean, I think they just need to use the Intercontinental and the U.S. a little bit more. Even JD, the U.S. is so bad, even JDL's poking fun at how often Dean Ambrose defends the thing. And you got Big E, he's winning matches, but why isn't he... I mean, if you're going to make the guy win like all his matches anyway, why not put the belt on the line, at least add some prestige to it? Like it's dumb. It's like, okay, I'm gonna fight a bunch of non-title matches. I'm gonna win them all. Well, why don't you have him defend the damn belt? I mean, if you're gonna job him out, I can understand why you want to make these things non-title. I mean, it's stupid, but at least like I could see why you're doing it. But you know, if he's just gonna come out and win 1-on-1 matches against Axel and all the time, like let him defend the belt against Axel. He was the former champion. I mean, he could get a rematch. Like, do something with it. Like, there's plenty of opportunity, but they're just not doing anything with it.
So those belts now, they're nothing more than, like, ring gear. You know, it's the case where the wrestler comes out, they have their ring... It's ring attire. That's all it is.
It's just a gimmick. They're just gimmick belts now.
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole kind of sad thing about the Intercontinental Championship was that this belt... When the Intercontinental Championship belt meant something, I felt the Intercontinental Champion back in the 80s and 90s. I felt that that belt, to me, had more prestige than the World Heavyweight Championship belt did. Because the World Heavyweight Championship belt, that's your guy, that's your marquee guy, and usually I didn't like the marquee guys. But the Intercontinital, they wrestled, it was on the line every time they wrestled. And they wrestled legit workers, and the guy had to be a legit worker. And the sad thing is that these belts are on two legitimate workers. I think Big E, in terms of what he does, is he the most technical wrestler around? No, but the guy works his ass off, and he puts on a great match. And then you have a guy like Dean Ambrose. We don't need to talk about the guy. It's just wasted talent. It's wasted opportunity, wasted talent. This whole time, Dean Ambrose could have been defending this belt week in and week out, every single week. Even if the Shield comes in and helps him win or whatever like that, it just builds it up even more. Like, the Shield's, like, helping him win all the time. It does two things. Okay, the Shield helping Dean Ambrose win the belt. The Shield right now, they're breaking up because Reigns is kind of, you know, putting himself out there more, saying he's the best and this, that, and this. And then Ambrose doesn't like it. And then Seth kind of has to come in. And sometimes Seth gets mad and everything. But the whole thing is that if Ambrose was defending this belt every single week or every week and a half or whatever it was on a show, at least like every 2 weeks, right? And the Shield's helping him out. Well, what does that do? It does two things. Once they get a legitimate guy to try to win that U.S. belt, if he beats Dean Ambrose with the U.S. belt, you can even have thrown a non-title match in there somewhere, right? But when Dean Ambrose gets beat and he loses the U.S. belt, all of a sudden this belt actually means something because people want to see Dean Ambrose lose that belt. On the flip side of that coin, it helps their storyline that they're doing right now with the Shield. It's like, you know, trying to break up the Shield. It's like, well, hey, Dean, we've been making you win this belt the whole time, mm-hmm. and you're not giving me the proper respect. This is Roman Reigns. You're not giving me the proper respect, you know, of what we do for you. And then that'll even add to what they have now, which is a good storyline right now, mm-hmm. but it adds to it, and they're not even doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, yeah. It's hard to explain. I mean, yeah, it's pretty hard to explain a lot of the decisions they're making, but that's another one. I mean, that should be pretty obvious. I mean, they gain nothing from just having him hold this belt and never defend the thing. It's like, the Shield pretty much wins every time that they step in the ring anyway. So again, what is it hurting to have them actually defend the belt every so often and win the match? And then, I mean, shit, they could even build something between him and Langston. Like, which it kind of looked like they were going to do something like that at the very beginning when Langston won the belt. But, I mean, you know, you got these two guys, they're really good workers, they've got the gold, and then they never defend the thing. And especially when there's a unified WWE and world title right now, I mean, you need to have, like, I mean, it's a pretty easy opportunity to do something with your mid-card champion, and they just choose to do absolutely nothing with it. It's like, I mean, it kind of goes back to this whole Road to WrestleMania thing. It's like, you know, we gotta keep down our up and coming guys because we gotta make sure that these old retired stars that we're bringing back for a one off look like they're something more special than they really are. And I think that's probably what it comes back to more than anything. It's like, why try to build the Intercontinental Champion now? Because you're probably not even gonna have a spot for him on WrestleMania. You know, why
they'll do the pre-show.
Yeah, why build a spot for the U.S. champion when, you know, the U.S. champion is not even going to defend that belt at the WrestleMania anyway? Because we got to get Brock Lesnar in, and we got to get Triple H another match, and we got to figure out something to do with Hulk Hogan
and the Undertaker
and Roddy Piper wants in, and we're maybe going to have Sting back, and we might do something with the Ultimate Warrior also.
And Liberace right now is tickling the ivories; he wants to be back in too.
Yeah,
you know, so
maybe they can dust off Cyndi Lauper too, since Piper wants in.
Yeah, you can dust off Cyndi Lauper. You can bring back Wendi Richter. Yeah, let's see who else. Run DMC. You can have Run DMC do the WrestleMania rap.
Maybe Sunny gets herself together and she can bring that belt out of the trash can.
That was Blaze. Alondra Blaze. No, I definitely have to say you're absolutely wrong about that. That wasn't Sunny. That was Alundra Blaze.
Alundra Blaze.
That is not Wolverine. No, that is not Sunny.
You sure?
I am flipping positive. You kidding me, dude? No, that is not. Sunny did not put the belt in the waste basket. Sunny did not do that, dude. No, she didn't. That was Alundra Blaze. And I'm probably saying her name, dude.
I know who Alundra Blaze is.
Get out of my house right now, dude. That was not Sunny. That was not Sunny. Sunny did not do that. Look, go on your phone right now. Look up Alondra Blaze putting the belt in the trash. That was not, no.
Pretty sure I'm right there, sir.
I'm pretty sure you're fucking wrong. And you need to get better vapor for your e-cigarette.
Yeah, just like and just how
you're... Look at your phone right now, dude.
Just how your cable is so much superior to mine, but you can't get internet here.
It has nothing to do with cable. How does you being wrong have anything to do with my cable? Now you want to diss my cable?
Yeah, it's
going to take you like 20 minutes because you can't even get on the flipping internet on your phone because you don't know how to use internet. Do I use search? Does search often here?
Uh-huh.
That is not that. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, you're gonna apologize to me in front of our 12 followers that we get or 12 listens that we get every week. All right. So we're back.
I was wrong.
You were wrong.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
Once you said that Alundra Blaze was Medusa, then it all came back. But yes.
But no apologies.
That was my mistake. I apologize.
Okay, thank you.
You were right about that particular incident.
Thank you. I don't even know what we're talking about now. So one thing I want to ask you then. So this kind of whole thing of everybody saying like, give the fans what they want. Okay. Who do you want to be U.S. champion right now?
I'm fine with Ambrose being the U.S. champion.
Okay.
It doesn't matter who's U.S. champion.
No,
they're not going to defend the shit.
No. But I'm saying, like, if the belts are played the way they're supposed to be played, you're fine with Ambrose being the U.S. champion. So am I.
I'm fine with that. I mean,
Intercontinental champion?
I'm fine with Langston having it, too.
You think Langston's the best guy to be that Intercontinental title holder?
I think if they push him through and have him beat a bunch of guys, and it sets him up as a guy who can start to challenge for Randy Orton or something. Yeah, then I think it's great. I mean, I think that's the purpose for that belt.
Okay.
I mean, you can have him go through and beat Ryback. You can have him go through and beat Cesaro. I mean, this Rusev guy looks relatively impressive. I don't know that he's like, you know, it's pretty early to put him in the title picture. But if you go have like Langston beat that guy too, I mean, you know, there's plenty of guys that he can go beat. And then that helps, as he defends the belt, that helps elevate him to a world title challenger.
If I'm going to go textbook Intercontinental title holder, the guy that I want to see is the guy that never got his due as that belt holder, and that'd be Dolph Ziggler. I want to see Dolph Ziggler with that belt. What about tag champions?
I mean, I'm fine with the Outlaws having it, but I think that's a short run. I think the guys that have earned it the most are the Usos. I'd like to see them get their run at some point, but I would definitely be fine with the Wyatts having that title also. I mean, I think that what I would do is I'd have the Usos take it from the Outlaws, and then ultimately they drop it to the Wyatts. But I think the Usos deserve to have some run.
WWE champion.
Probably Brian or Punk.
Brian the Punk. So that's where we're kind of left at with right now. I'm fine with Randy Orton being the... I agree with you. I think the Usos... I want to see that if I was to pick anybody on the roster be a tag team champion, I would like to see the Usos there because they put the work in. And I think if anything that you take away from any of our podcasts is that we appreciate the workers. And not like even with the workers, like, but even the guys that put in work on their gimmick to really have their gimmick take off. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would really like to see the Usos. I'm not big fans of their gimmick or their kind of non-gimmick that they have, mm-hmm. but their work is great. And it's one thing that I like about wrestling is you talking about a guy or talking about a tag team going like, I really like these guys. I'm like, well, why do you like them? And it's like, oh, you just like them because they're Samoan and this, that, and this. But then they can actually come around and they prove what you were saying. And even to like a small part with me, like with me saying like, hey, like, you know, hey, this guy, The Rock, is pretty good. And then you watch him go like, yeah, you know, oh yeah, he has the goods. Or like, hey, Benoit's the man, dude. You know, hey, Booker T is doing really well in the singles area. Kevin Nash is doing great stuff. Or hey, Scott Hall is doing really good stuff too. So yeah, I'm all for the Usos. And I'm glad that they lived up to your expectation of what they are, and I believe they surpassed the expectations that you had for them. The work that they've done, they've over the past year have grown leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. I think there's certain things that hold them back. I think their dancing holds them back just a little bit, just because they really don't know what to do, and they can't cut promos. But I think somewhere down the line they can. They'd be good guys to have. You know, I wouldn't say like a Paul Heyman guy, but someone like that can really kind of steer their promos and then let them kind of, you know, kind of get past this guy and kind of stand out on their own.
Rikishi should come back and cut the promos for him. And he should say, I did it for the Usos.
I did it for my kids. I did it for my sons.
Nah, well, this would be my thing about the Usos. So I think that they really, at the time when they first were coming up, was probably the lowest point in the history of tag team wrestling. And I thought at that point in time, when it was Tyson Kidd and Davey Boy's son that were the tag team champions, I thought the Usos, they definitely deserved to get a title run at that time, because they're pretty much handing it out to everybody. Once they actually, the creative team made an effort to elevate the tag team division, and they brought some new teams in when Kane and Daniel Bryan like had their run and there were some solid teams, I thought that they were still getting better, but the landscape at that time dictated that they didn't deserve to be champions. And it's not like we've been here in the last year saying, oh, give them their title shot. We've been saying their work's been great, but we have never said, oh, well, they need to be champions just because. But now they've actually gotten to the point where I think they do deserve to be the champions. So even though I think they should have been champions before, it wasn't necessarily because of how, I mean, I thought they were good, I saw a lot of potential, but it was more an indictment on how bad the tag team division was. But now that they've had probably the best tag team division in the last decade, I think they've risen to the top of that tag team division.
Well, when they had that tag team tournament where it was Epico, Serpico, the Rhodes Scholars, Kane and Daniel Bryan were the champions, and then you had the Usos, and then you had the
Primetime.
Yeah, the Primetime players. The Usos, them getting beat, really elevated, and I think maybe the Rhodes Scholars did beat them, but having the Rhodes Scholars beat a team like the Usos really kind of, to me, solidified them as a team. So they've always done the work, and they've always kind of, you know, yeah, you say that, but I always felt that they were the benchmark of that tag team division, because even with Kane and Daniel Bryan, they were put together that you have two kind of stars that they didn't know what to do with, and then they surprised us a lot with the work that they did. But I always thought that the Usos were the benchmark of that division, even when it was doing bad, and when it started kind of coming up, when they made an effort to it. So yeah, I mean they've done really good work, and it's you know, you watch them, you don't fast forward their matches. You know you're going to get a good match, and we always talk about elevating here, elevating there. When they go against the Shield, when they were fighting the Shield, when the Shield had the belts, both teams elevated each other, and they both came out looking better than they were before. And it's just funny that these guys, how fast they've risen, to me, they're like the Daniel Bryan of the tag team division. They're like the CM Punk, Daniel Bryan of the tag team division. They elevate other people. They put on great matches. You get your money's worth with them. And the team that they're going against, you get their money's worth watching them too.
Yeah, I mean, the big difference is, I mean, I'd say, yeah, they're like the Daniel Bryan of that division 2 years ago. Daniel Bryan was putting on great matches, but, like, his gimmick pretty much sucked. Okay, and we talk about guys who have, like, really improved themselves, like, on the microphone or as their character. He's probably the best guy in the last, I don't even know how long, that, you know, you got a track record of being a guy that's pretty bland, and then in about a year to 2 years, you turn yourself into a guy that can actually cut a really good promo and get people behind you. They haven't done that yet, and that's the one thing that I think, you know, I don't think the dancing is holding them back, but I do think their ability to cut a promo is, and I'd say the fact that, it may even be part of the fact that they're twins and it's really hard to differentiate one from the other. I think that doesn't necessarily work in their favor, so I think WWE likes to be able to market like two different guys. And when they're doing a tag team program, like Daniel Bryan and Kane were these polar opposites, and they can kind of market each one and like play them against each other. They can't really do that with the Usos because it's hard to differentiate like one from the next.
See, but I think that helps them out as a tag team though, because I don't ever see these two guys breaking up and kind of doing the whole cliche of them breaking up and them going against each other, because it's like, well, who won the match?
Yeah, like, no one would know.
You're gonna have making. And then a difference, you know, it's like, it's making versus a difference.
But I think it hurts them because they stay pigeonholed as like, well, they're going to be a tag team here for the next 15 years. So whenever we want to decide to give them a belt, then we can do that. But we know they're always going to do the work for us. And that's the thing. I think they get taken for granted as a team to a certain degree.
Well, do you want to see one of these guys break out as an
individual star? I want them to stay as a tag team. But what I'm saying is I think it's easy for them, for the creative to look at them and say, well, we don't need to give them the belts now. We can do it some other time because, you know, we don't have any other plans for them except for to remain a tag team. And I think they're just going to be – they'll probably have several tag team runs, but they'll always be like transitional champions as they're trying to go from one major tag team to the next if they do decide to keep those belts relevant.
Okay. So we're an hour in already, so let's start wrapping it up. I want to try to maybe introduce a new segment in here.
Okay.
And this is – I've been thinking about – I haven't talked to you about it.
Is this a Batista segment?
It's not a Batista segment, no.
Shocker.
I mean, we got to get the Botox for that, and it's kind of expensive right now. So we do have our Hall of Kayfabe, and this might lead into the next segment I want to do, depending on who we pick. But I think either way, whoever we get, so go ahead. The Hall of Kayfabe is all on you. It's on your shoulders right now. You're Atlas right now, holding the world on your shoulders, and you're going to do the Hall of Kayfabe right now. Let's see what you do.
All right. Well, despite how things have gone for the past few weeks, I guess, and kind of our disappointment with creative, I'm going to go on the overall body of this guy's work. I was kind of thinking about it, and this is a former Royal Rumble winner, but I think that we need to induct Vincent Kennedy McMahon. I think like he's kind of done everything in the business, was always like a pretty, you know, mediocre to subpar announcer, but was made really good with the guys that he was with, was really good going against Monsoon and going against Ventura, with Ventura picking on him when he was kind of like the dork announcer of the time. But then when he had to totally flip and change his character to that Mr. McMahon
and save his company.
Yeah, and then jump in the ring, you know, even not like the guy's a great worker, but he put on matches that you wanted to see with Stone Cold. And it's not like, you know, like when you look at Triple H and you can kind of question like, well, yeah, this guy's just like making himself win matches to feed his own ego. Whenever McMahon won a match, it actually had something to do with furthering a storyline. And when he needed to get his ass kicked, he got his ass kicked, whether it was in the ring or in the hospital with a bedpan. But the guy always did the work, came up with like probably the second best strut in the history of professional wrestling next to Ric Flair's. And didn't have to rip anything off like one Double J Jeff Jarrett. But the McMahon strut.
Or the Miz.
Right.
Because the Miz bites off of VKM's strut a little bit.
Does he? I didn't even notice the Miz doing anything. I mean, that doesn't remind me of anything that McMahon does. But, I mean, you know, and, you know, he's still the guy. So, you know, I can't separate him from, if I say WWE creative, like, you know, I guess indirectly you're saying Vincent McMahon. But, you know, on his overall of the work that he's done for the past, I don't even know how many years. I mean, I think McMahon needs to be in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, by far. I mean, he has had his failures. The Gobbledygooker, Giant Gonzalez, the Repo Man.
Kali.
The Red Rooster.
Yeah. The Red Rooster was not a failure.
It wasn't a failure?
I'm sorry.
But it wasn't as good. It
was like, okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, no, the guy's eye for talent, and you kind of brought this up last week, but even getting guys like, knowing the guys to get, like Mean Gene, awful Alfred, Lord Alfred, even Tunney. I mean, even Tunney was serviceable for a while, but as much negative as this guy gets, you know, because everybody is so quick to point the finger at this guy, but the guy, I mean, how much money has this guy made? I mean, over everything, and how much has he's on the cusp of everything that takes off, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like Twitter. I said, you know what? I need to start getting on Twitter when I started seeing his stars come out, and they have the Twitter lines right underneath there, and that was like they were like one of the first companies to do that, to fully embrace Twitter, to see what Twitter could be. And to tell you the truth, I think they've had a big reason for Twitter's growth more than anything else. Mm-hmm. A couple things that he's done is the whole, like, we bagged the PG era. But there was a PG era before that. I mean, Hulk Hogan during the 80s, I mean, he made it so little kids could go watch wrestling and they can become lifelong fans. And then over the course of this time, too, he's made it woman-friendly, too. I mean, there's a ton of women fans that watch wrestling. And when we're growing up, I mean, hell, like, maybe there's like four or five girls in our school, in like either middle school or high school, that watch wrestling. And then when they did, you're like, oh man, this girl's cool, and you talk to her and stuff. And I remember, you know, that'd be like some of the things, like, hey, you know, we talk about some girl that you liked or something like that that you wanted to ask out and stuff. And I'd have to kind of pump you up a little bit to say, hey man, go ask her out. And he's like, oh, she likes wrestling too. So I was like, yeah. So what's the problem? You know. So yeah. I mean, we can sit here and talk about this guy and say everything that he's done, but he's one of the guys to induct in the Hall of Kayfabe. We don't have to say anything. We just say he deserves to be in the Hall. He's gotten his run that he's always gotten a run. He's had memorable promos. I wouldn't know so much about memorable matches, but if you needed the Fall Guy, he was there. If you needed the guy that was just a dictator, he was there.
Like, there's not many guys that are the boss that would come out and, like, get their ass kicked.
Even like the Super Bowl commercials and stuff. I mean, the things he did during the Super Bowl, like, he was one of like the kind of the first, like, and you know, they did, you know, I'm not going to say that he started the whole commercial boom. I mean, because it was already there, like, you know, Super Bowl commercials were there, but creative wise, with like that one epic commercial they did where The Rock is walking around the corporate office and stuff, and Kane's being some guy up in the background and stuff, and the guy gets thrown out the window, and it just works. And even like, you know, the commercials that he had with John Cena, you know, when John Cena was first taken off, you know?
Yeah. Even more than that, like, the whole idea to put a Rock versus Mankind as a halftime event, when that kind of like started this whole, you know, it didn't really last, but there was this whole movement of different kind of gimmick shows to put at halftime, like the Puppy Bowl or the Lingerie Bowl. And I think all that started off of the idea of putting this wrestling match in at halftime. And that was actually a pretty solid match, too.
Yeah.
So,
But see, he forced the NFL to revamp their halftime.
Right.
And it's whether it's better or worse, but the NFL now sees themselves as being an entertainment venture at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people want to talk about the halftime show and this, that, and this. But, hell, I mean, Bruno Mars doesn't get on the halftime show without guys like Vince McMahon pushing the bill, saying, hey, I know I can get ratings during the halftime show because your halftime show sucks and you're having people that nobody cares about. Yeah. You know, and that's the whole thing. I mean, hey, man, Bruno Mars doing that flipping, doing the old 1960 James Brown type dance and stuff. That shit was kicking, dude. You know, I was like, all right, this guy's in the spot, man.
Yeah, no,
you know, doing it for Hawaiians everywhere, dude.
Mars is the man, and he's Rican, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Rican and Filipino.
Rican and Filipino. Good combination. So, yeah, great. So, Vince came in, man. Yeah, I don't think we need to say anything more about this guy.
Right.
So, the other segment I wanted to get into, because I thought you were going to go somewhere else, which is fine, but this is
the guy that we discussed before.
Yeah, but, you know, but you always pleasantly surprise me. Even with you apologizing, That surprised me too, because you're a very prideful person. So you apologize and you manned up, dude, so I'm proud of you. So, next segment I want to get into. This is the first segment that we can do, and I don't think we'll ever run out of material for this segment. Kind of like, because we had the Haku segment. Really enjoyed the Haku segment. Real stories of Haku 101. Memorable promos. And the one I've been using a lot. Let's not do the Jeff Farmer one. But I'm talking about, like, kind of good. I mean, we can do bad promos, but kind of good promos, too. Ones that we remember, like, pretty much word for word. And the first one that I want to put, maybe we have the Promo Hall of Fame. I don't know about that, but
There could be another wing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yeah. But I want to do both at the same. So the golden microphone that we can give these guys. The first guy that I want to put with the golden microphone, and no, it's not going to be Ric Flair. No, it's not going to be Arn Anderson. But the first kind of promo that we knew word for word was the Big Boss Man's opening promo when he went to the WWF. Now, do you want to do the honors, or do you want me to do the honors?
I can't do the whole promo verbatim, but I just know it finishes off with something along the lines of, you have the right to suffer.
No.
You have the right to feel pain.
No, no, no.
You wish to have an attorney present? I'll hurt him too.
No, you sin cara that one, man. You botched that one. It's you have the right to remain silent. You have the right to feel pain. If you want an attorney present, I'll hurt him too. But great promo by this guy, dude. Like one of the best promos ever. And that like just set this guy up for like a great heel turn. It's like, you have the right to remain silent. You have the right to feel pain. If you want an attorney present, I heard it too. So just great, great promo across the board. I've been, over the past like 2-3 weeks, I've been using that a lot. Just kind of just random things. So that's like the golden mic that we're given. We're given like the five mic star, you know, source awards back when the source meant something. But yeah, Bossman is the first inductee with that golden mic. Great, great promo work. And it wasn't the only promo that he ever did, but that's the one that you like that I always remember. And I remember watching it going like, I'm like, man, like, this is pretty stupid. But it fucking works. Yeah.
It's a pretty silly gimmick, this prison guard from Cobb County, Georgia. But he actually was. But yeah, but it did work. And then you have him with Hakeem dancing in the back like a big goof. And then the slick stuff, brother.
I usually like the Hakeem dances, dude. Akeem dancing while Bossman and Slickster are throwing out promos.
The Slickster might have to get a golden mic for laying down the vocal tracks on the...
Not right now. But the people... I said later. So we got that. So you got a match that you remember watching? Or a match you want to talk about?
Nothing comes to mind right now. I don't have any match off the top of the dome that I could come out with.
So did we ever talk about, like, I know I said this is the match I wanted to see when WWE Network came out, but have we ever talked about the I Quit match between The Rock and Mankind?
I think we did. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did.
But we never like, actually talked. We've alluded to it, but we never really talked about it.
I think we talked about it as a match, because I remember talking about how it came with the finish with the pin with the forklift.
We did no. I'm not talking about the Raw. I'm not talking about. We did talk about the.
Oh, the.
We did talk about the. We did talk about the one that was in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But this was the I Quit match that The Rock and Mankind had. So seeing how you're trying to remember it, we didn't talk about it. So this is the one that where Mankind said I quit, but it was taken off of the promo his he
promo
did
a week
the Raw before, where it was like I quit, I quit. I quit. But this match, dude, was like, it was something else at the time. I mean, it was groundbreaking in multiple ways. Like, our podcast is called Muda Scale, right? Well, this thing could be called like the chair shot scale. I mean, The Rock gave this guy so many flipping chair shots, like straight on chair shots. And the whole thing about this match, and there's so many things I want to talk about this match, is that first of all, you had The Rock, and then you had Shane right there with him. And it's a no holds barred match. They're going all over the arena. They're going up to the stands, and The Rock throws Mankind into the electrical panels and stuff, right? And he kayfabe shorts out the whole flipping arena. It turns all dark, and the lights come back on.
Was it better than when Goldberg got hit with the cattle prod?
Yeah, that's another match we can talk about, but on many different levels, but. But, I mean, The Rock was in his prime at that time. So, like, Shane is just, like, perfect in this match. So, like, Mankind's, like, pretty much, like, electrocuted, like, just, like, pretty much doing the Goldberg, like, cattle prod. You know, so he's all electrocuted. He's all shaking on the floor. And Shane's just, like, looking around. And he's like, Rock. He's all, we got to stop this match. We got to stop. He's like, this isn't right. We got to stop it. And The Rock, in perfect Rock, when Rock was at the top of the uniform, he's like, no, 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 no! He's like, I swore that I'd make Mankind say I quit, and I'll be damned if I don't. So they have this whole match. So that's just like the halfway through. And then The Rock comes in and just starts bashing this guy on top of the head, just laying him out, just like blood's opening up everywhere. And this was one of the matches in Beyond the Mat. It was right before when they were kind of going through the whole kind of, I think it was the dude that did Fahrenheit 9-1-1. You know, Mike, whatever that guy's name is.
Michael Moore.
Yeah, so I think he was the one that did it. And so they kind of show, like, them backstage before the match. And Mankind, you know, and it's funny because Mankind's kids are there with him. And The Rock comes walking in, and Mankind's kids are just afraid of The Rock because, I mean, it's still kayfabe for them. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is like a, you know, he's trying to say hi to the kids and stuff or whatever. And The Rock was kind of in his kind of ego mode of a young guy that, you know, knew his stuff was on, and he kind of carried himself that way. Mm-hmm. And so The Rock's kind of like, well, are you ready for this match? And Mankind's like, yeah, he's, I am. He's like, don't pull back on these chair shots, you know, like, just give them to me, like, mm-hmm. give them to me, like, which The Rock was known to do. I mean, he, like, laid out Ken Shamrock just, like, with one of the best chair shots ever with, you know, and it was funny because in the one of The Rock's Know Your Role, it was kind of still, like, a kayfabe type, it was a VHS tape back then. But it's funny, like, The Rock's like, he's like, you're going to call it The Rock. And you're gonna go like this to The Rock, and like, so what Ken Shamrock did was he put his hand up. He's like, "Come on, give it to me." He's like, "You're gonna do that to The Rock?" He's like, "Well," The Rock pretending he was Hank Aaron, and swung for the fences, right? So after the match, like, Mankind is pretty much out of it, you know. And so he's getting all stitched up, and like, his wife is there, and the whole thing's like with that Beyond the Mat documentary. His wife and kids, Mankind's wife and kids, are in the front row, and there's a ton of people just like, you know, just want to see Mankind get his ass kicked. And they're, like, cheering, and his kids are crying and stuff. So she actually has to pick up the kids, and they have to leave because the kids can't take it. And she can't take it either because The Rock is just laying in. Like, The Rock had, like, four or five chair shots, like, full-power chair shots right on top of the head in a row. So she has to end up leaving. And I think the best thing about that whole match was after he's getting stitched up and his kids are, like, just scared out of their mind because his dad's all bloodied up and, like, his daughter's just all crazy. Crying and stuff, and Mankind, like, he's like, oh, it's just a boo boo, you know, daddy got a boo boo and stuff, and everything. And so, Moore starts talking about those chair shots, and he's like, I'm kind of mad at The Rock, you know, he's like, he probably gave me like four or five too many. He's all, but you know what? He's like, it made the match. And so, I thought it was just, it really kind of really shows, like, it showed Mankind in a different light. It's like, he told The Rock to, and you kind of start questioning The Rock too. It's like, hey, you know, like, Rock, you know, it's like, maybe he just, like, went too crazy. But that's kind of the things that we're saying about wrestlers now, like, say, like a Cena. You know, like, The Rock could react to the crowd. He knew he was getting big pops out. He knew he could make it a great match if he hit him, like, five or six more times than they planned, right? And Mankind at the end says, like, you know what, I'm mad at him. You know, I'm kind of upset. He's all, but it made the match. Mm-hmm. And that's what made the match so great. So that's what I took away from the match. I don't know if you want to add anything else to that.
No, I mean, that's good to hear. I mean, it's interesting stuff. I'd say, yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, the you know, not like I'm saying that we're ever going to go back to the non-PG era, but that was some of the liberties that they could take at the time. So, you know, I mean, I think the guys today maybe are a little bit hamstrung, but yeah, they couldn't ad-lib the same way that The Rock could ad-lib, the way that Mankind could ad-lib. And that's why, you know, when you try to bring somebody back just because he fits the mold of what The Rock was to a certain degree, it doesn't have the same reaction if they can't go out there and get the job done. And that's kind of the problem that we're facing now. So even though The Rock hasn't been at his greatest the last couple of years coming back, at least The Rock at a time was, you know, one of those guys that you could hang your promotion on. And that's one of the main matches that kind of put him to that level and made it wise. So.
And even better about that match was that it kind of became a squash match at the end where The Rock is just like totally dominating. He kept on sticking that microphone in Mankind. Well, I think this was like in the beginning, but he's like, Mankind, you big whatever it is. He's like, are you going to say I quit? And he puts a microphone in Mankind's mouth, and Mankind's like, go to hell, Rock. So it's just... On both levels, you know, both performers in their prime. I mean, Mankind was never a technical guy, but he was in his prime that night. The Rock in his full heel mode was at the height of him being, like, probably one of the best heels of all time. Mm-hmm. So just two guys colliding, a very entertaining match. And then not only was the match entertaining with what happened in terms of shock value, but these guys were still able to talk during the match and really kind of show who they are. The Rock was... great in that. It was like a great run of, you know, people forget about that rivalry, but that was a great rivalry because The Rock was just this over-the-top character, and Mankind was too. Mankind has so much street cred and indie cred that people love the guy, but he was starting to kind of come out of this whole Mankind type thing and really take off as a as an individual person where he started becoming entertaining, and I think this was one of the groundworks for him to take off to really become the Mankind that we know now and what everybody respects. So
yeah. I mean, Mankind never gets to the level that he got to if it wasn't for him working against The Rock. And I think that was one of the things, because I could have cared less about Mankind, to be honest. And, you know, even that night when he got the belt and Shivani squashed him on WCW, and as much as I dislike Shivani, in my mind I'm like, yeah, I don't give a fuck about Mankind. Okay, but the matches that he put on with The Rock, because I wanted to see The Rock wrestle, really made me go back and say, wait, Mankind, like, you know, this guy's got something going. And it was actually when I really full-on gained, like, the whole respect for Mankind was actually the matches that he did with Triple H, ironically, because I don't really care for Triple H, but just the way that he gave up the body to go through those matches, I was just really impressed, and he made those matches pretty good for a guy who I kind of thought, like, Triple H matches were generally boring, you know, and Mankind matches I thought were, like, just kind of so-so, whatever. To see those two guys put on really good matches and then actually, you know, actually made me think, damn, like, you know, Mankind really came out, like, he did the job for this guy big time.
And to tell you the truth, like, Mankind, he doesn't get the credit, but I didn't, you know, it was WCW and WWF going back and forth, and I was a WCW guy. But the match that really started to make me go, like, wait a minute, there was a couple matches that did that. One was, like, it was Stone Cold versus The Rock, and I said this before, it was just a mid-card match, and they just went all out. And I'm sort of going, like, man, like, performance-wise, these guys, I haven't seen this type of drive and, like, they wanted to be the best, and you can see that in those matches. So that's when I started to kind of turn the table a little bit in a bad way, because they turned the table on me. But the one that really started it was where I started going, like, well, WWF is now the product to watch, was Undertaker versus Mankind in that steel cage. And see that cage one, I'm just going, like, what the hell? I've never seen that before. Mm-hmm. But the one that really got me, the worst bump was when, Undertaker choke slammed him at the top of the cage, and he took the bump on the match, which was a way worse bump than the one that when he got thrown off. I mean, everybody thinks the one where he got thrown off was the bad bump, but you talk to any wrestler, and I've heard other wrestlers talk about that. He's like, yeah, that was eye catching. He's all, but all the wrestlers, the bump that they're talking about is when he got choke slammed and he had to take that big ass drop straight to the mat, and nothing gave, because, like, when you get thrown off. Well, the thing gives, so it takes some of the impact off, right? Mm-hmm. Because it rolls off. We get into physics of Einstein and all that stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. But there was no give on that mat. And when I saw that match, I was like, wait a minute. I'm like, okay, now they got my attention. And that's when I really started to respect Mankind. It really started me going to the WWF product over WCW, because WCW wasn't doing that.
Right.
So we always talk about Hall of Kayfabe and stuff, and it's funny that we're not talking about Mankind, putting Mankind in there, but in terms of impact that he had on the WWF, and I would say that, yeah, you're right. Mankind doesn't become Mankind without The Rock. But at the same time, I don't know if The Rock gets that much higher with his first championship run that he had as WWF champion without Mankind.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's two dichotomies to that. So we're getting up into it. We have Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. We're on Muda Scale number 64. We'll be Muda Scale number 65 next week. And we got some homework to do. You know, we got to try to change the show up a little bit, because I don't know if we can always talk about the same type of frustrations we have with the WWE with the way it is right now.
Yeah, well, they're kind of fresh frustrations. We can't keep going on and on about them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, CM Punk walking is a pretty big deal. And the way that I think that the creative team is going to deal with it. I mean, yeah, I think the wrestling fan is changing in certain ways. And
so let's table that for next week. That's what we're going to get into next week. Okay, your hypotenuse, hypothesis, theory, your theorem on the change in the wrestling fan. Better Have My Donuts over on Bad News Ramen. We'll check you guys out.
And it's BL in the house, and I'm a flipping screw down Mac Kelly, A+ Domino. Man,
man, we got to kick this little shit right here on my downtime on the album. Check it out. MCs is too promiscuous, so if you fuss, I'ma be the next to bust and take you on the extra dust. Reckless checkers, ain't nobody next to us. Step through us and get reduced to a speck of dust. Fuck the heckless detectives with their secret societies. We speak with variety, so stand back before you caught in my sand trap. And lariat, you better bury it. Go along with your merriment. Harrow getting every cent, and we earned it and burned it in your brain like brands. And now everyone demands Dell and his entourage, and you can all get squashed. We mock it up, we mega ambitious, magnificent. Fuck the whimsical, miserable. We sit to kill competitors and regulate and make you hesitate. You better wait. Time to set it straight. You never take a vote for granted, cause what you ain't peeping is equal to what we call sleeping. Slumbering and fuck the cumbersome. Keep the tabs on the tongues and let the bomb numb your lungs. Yeah, craniologist, the many novelist, the tactical graphical with lyrics for capital. After you, high speed chase, we race. All existing life forms are driving the free face.